with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
All right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time, and welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you remember and reclaim that which you have always been and are. Very excited to be with you here this evening and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you've been following me for some time, you know that every one of these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. I am Dr. James Houck, and it is certainly a privilege to be here with you this evening. I thank you for everybody that's tuning in. And if you would like more information more information about me, or maybe you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I just invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you want to get on the personal website, it's also www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So, again, thank you for each and every person that's tuned in this evening. And if you would like to call in later and be part of the show, or maybe you want to call in with any insights or questions or general conversations on tonight's topic, just invite you to call that toll-free number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, that's okay, because this broadcast will be posted on the BBS Radio website, so you can go back and listen again, or if you want, you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. So, and I just want to start this evening by giving a big shout out to every listener here tonight that I'm in my sixth year with BBS Radio, and what a ride it has been. Where has the time gone? And certainly had, still have a lot of fun doing these shows. And I look forward to seeing what the next 6 years will bring. So again, to all the listeners, I am so grateful for your support. And just wanted to share that, you know, when I started this series, I really wanted to emphasize the integration of spirituality and our mental health. Because, you know, I haven't seen it all, but I've seen enough and I've heard enough. And one thing is for certain, that I have not only seen through these broadcasts, but also through my clinical practice, is that there is a growing awareness and a hunger for the need for people to not only integrate their mental health with their spirituality, but also they really want to apply their spiritual growth within the context of relationships. And that is so important, because I like the way I describe it to my clients, that, you know, relationships are kind of the common denominator that in everything that we do, you know, and just, you know, who we are in relationship with in terms of our personal and professional relationships. But we are social beings, and so relationships is who we are and what we function in and how we function and so forth. Well, came across Edgar Cayce one time, who is considered to be the father of holistic medicine and the most documented psychic of the 20th century. He once wrote that what is truly valuable in thought, in activity, as well as in experience, is this sense of appreciation, this inner realization, and the understanding of the self, namely, the self in relation to others and the self into relation to God. And meditation is a means to this end. And I couldn't agree more. You know, like I said, it's just a very powerful quote, and I just keep coming back to it time and time again, that he was saying it way, way back when he was doing his work, the importance of, you know, relationships and so forth. And, you know, there are many positive outcomes related to this integration of our mental health and our spiritual health, all within the context of relationships. And really, this is where I come in, because I have a keen interest in really helping people discover their authenticity and to live their authentic lives by helping them find the courage to be able to reclaim what has always been in them, as well as remembering who they have always been and who they are as a soul. Because I do have a solid belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life in terms of our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so forth, every good thing about us. And how we live our giftedness and skills and talents and strengths and so forth is in and through various relationships. And this aspect is very important, especially when considering who we are. Because although we may have similar gifts, we may have similar skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express all these things identically. So in other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. And people try and imitate how other people do things, I guess as a form of flattery, but really, nobody has the ability to duplicate us, because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hacheitas, my favorite Latin word. In fact, it's my only Latin word I know, but hacheitas. It's a thisness. It's a uniqueness, if you will. And I really love explaining this word hacheitas to kids and teenagers. They just think it's a cool sounding word. But, you know, I say, you know, look at your thumb. You know, everybody has the thumbprint. You know, everybody has their giftedness or their strengths or skills and the best of who they are. But just like no two thumbprints are alike, no two thisness or no two uniqueness is the same. And this is, you know, therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are as souls, this hacheitas. Well, welcome to tonight's show. I am, again, so glad that you're here with me. You know, it's kind of a fun show. The title is What's on Your Mind When Words Fail Us? Okay. And I just wanted to start off tonight by just reminding us of maybe a situation where I'm certain all of us at one time or another have found ourselves. And that's at being a loss for words. Okay. Can you identify with that? Being at a loss for words. You know, not in the usual sense where we forget a person's name 5 minutes after meeting them. You know, that's an entirely different situation. Maybe I'll have a show dedicated to that. How do we remember people's names? But I'm really talking about being in a situation or circumstances and feeling as though we wanted to say something. Or we should say something, or maybe we should have said something, but we just couldn't find the words. And I'm always reminded of a time in my life when I was about 9 years old, and I was attending my great-grandmother's funeral, the very first funeral I attended, you know, and I didn't know what was going on, but I was all ears. I was all eyes. I wanted to know. I wanted to learn. Why do we do what we do? Unfortunately, nobody could explain it to me. So I was just told to sit and watch and listen. Okay, that I could do. Now, back when I was 9 years old, and even then some, I was the kind of kid who was always bouncing off the walls, you know, running here and there, you know, always on the baseball field or bringing something home from the creek, which in hindsight, maybe that was often better left there. But at any rate, my great-grandmother's funeral was the first funeral I ever attended. And for a 9-year-old, like I said, I wanted to know what this was all about. And I remember being in this old, drab, funeral home. And you're sitting there and you got this dreary organ music playing in the background. It's raining outside. And the funeral director looked more like the crypt keeper. I mean, he looked like he was up next. Well, anyway, I'm sitting there on this musty, crushed velvet love seat, watching my grandmother receive those friends and family members that came to call and offer their sympathies. Now, I don't remember any of the people's faces, but strangely enough, I do remember what the people said to my grandmother. Usually it's the other way around, where we often forget what people say, but we remember faces. Well, at any rate, people would come up to my grandmother and they would say things like, "Well, she's gone on to meet her maker. She's in a better place now. She lived a good long life." And even, "Now you have to keep busy so you won't have to think about her. Be strong now. You have to bear up." Now, ironically, even to this day, their words stay with me, because at the time when I heard these conversations, those words that were meant to provide comfort and reassurance, well, they kind of left me empty. They left me wanting more. I just like, "Wait a minute, is that it? That's what you got to say? She's gone on to be a better place. She lived a good long life. She's gone on to meet her maker. Like, what is that? That's it?" I mean, I found no comfort in what I call these canned statements. Now, we could spend the rest of this radio show dissecting how people in uncomfortable situations often force themselves to say something, which usually ends up with people sticking their foot in their mouths. Okay. And I imagine we've all been there at one time or another, feeling pressured to say something. "I don't know what to say. I got to say something. So, what? Write this down. I got to say, okay, I'm sorry." Or, "She's gone on to meet her maker," or something like that. But as often is the case, not knowing what to say, well, that should be a clear signal to us that it's better not to say anything at all. However, I want us to go in a different direction tonight. What if, okay, what if instead of searching for the right words to say in any given situation, let us first realize that we always have the right words with us because the right words are in us. But let's realize that we always have the right words with us because the right words are in us. And this awareness changes this perspective and the whole conversation, because now our words will not come from a place of pressure, let's say, or nervousness, but rather our conversations can now come from that place of peace. They can be more sincere. They can be more heartfelt. They can really provide healing if words are necessary. You see, these moments are more about being in right relationships rather than worrying about saying the right things, let alone feeling like we always need to be right. I mean, there's too much of that in the world, and like, how about we strive to be in right relationships with one another? Because authenticity is really more about when we are in a healthy, right relationship with one another, then we can be in the moment with each other. We can be authentic and not worrying about filling up the space with a bunch of talk. I mean, even silence carries with it a healing power. The times when words just fail us and we just look at, another person in the eye, or we give them a hug and a comfort without any words. Sometimes words are appropriate. Other times, not so much. Because, I often kick around, this question, how do we get to this place within ourselves? How do we get to this place within ourselves whereby we always have the right words within us, but we also live in right relationships with each other? Well, I think it begins with knowing when we should say the most important four things that matter the most. Then, when we come from a place of authenticity in our relationships, saying these four things will come effortlessly and honestly. And interestingly enough, saying these four things brings us right back to funerals, because it is within the context of saying goodbye to loved ones, where people often struggle to say what they feel like they need to say. So are you ready? Grab a pen, get something to write with. Here they are. The four things. I forgive you for, and then you fill in the blank. So I forgive you for, okay, that's the first one. The second one is, please forgive me for, and then fill in the blank. So I forgive you for, please forgive me for, and then the third one is, thank you for, and then the last one is, I love you because, and then you just fill in a blank, you know, with the context. Now, I would like to take credit for coming up with these four sayings on my own, but they're actually taken from a book entitled Necessary Words, The Four Things That Matter the Most by Ira Byock, B-Y-O-C-K. And this is one of these people that I would have loved to have met, you know, because the first time I came across this book was when I was in the company of Borders, you know, Borders bookstores that were still in business. Love that store. And I was walking up and down the aisle. And you know, if you've ever been in a Borders bookstore, you know, you've got thousands and thousands of, you know, magazines and thousands of books. And you know, it's just, where do you begin? Well, I was walking up and down the aisle, you know, just browsing when Ira Byock's name caught my eye. And I knew of him before, you know, but for those who are unfamiliar with Ira Byock, he's a physician, an author, and a huge advocate for palliative care and hospice for over 40 plus years. And this book, you know, The Four Things That Matter the Most, it's a great book for anyone who is walking through the impending death of a loved one. I became familiar with his work when I was involved with counseling people through their loss and grief. So anything he wrote is certainly worth reading. So anyway, I picked up this book. Like I said, his name caught my eye, The Necessary Words, The Four Things That Matter the Most. I found a comfy chair and I started reading. And before I knew it, I was halfway through the book. You know, at that point, I knew I was going to buy the book, you know, even after the first chapter, you know, that. And I kept getting those looks from the salespeople walking around, you know, the looks that say, okay, buddy, are you going to sit there all day? Or are you actually going to buy the book? Well, of course I was going to buy the book. They just didn't want me to keep taking up space. I forgive you for, please forgive me for, thank you for, I love you because. And as I said before, these four things are indispensable when you have so many things that you want to say to a loved one or a friend who is dying. I mean, you know your time is limited with your loved one, and you want to make sure that you had a chance to say everything you want to say. I get that. I understand that completely. But you know, these words are not just about saying goodbye, but rather saying these four things are all about restoring relationships. You know, the hurt and the pain that others have caused us, or the hurt and pain that we've caused others. Being grateful for every blessing, especially for the blessings that cannot be repaid. And the love we have for those who are the closest to us. Being in right relationships is far more important than thinking that we always need to be right. And even if you don't get a chance to say the four things to your loved one before their death or a friend or a neighbor, we can certainly say these four things to them at any time afterwards. Because you see, there is no time and space that limits us from saying, I forgive you, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. these words are eternal because our relationships with each other are eternal. Well, if you've ever read the book or maybe you've seen the movie Tuesdays with Morrie, there's one great quote from just 100 of quotes in that book from Morrie Schwartz that sticks out more than any of his other sayings for me. And that is, death ends a life, not a relationship. And this is so true, because we are more connected with each other than we realize. Ours is a connection that extends way, way, way beyond the grave. But you know, what is the most important lesson about saying the four things that matter the most? It's not necessarily just about death and dying, but rather it's actually a lesson about how we ought to be living. I mean, think about it this way. For as much as it is important to say these words to a loved one who is dying, what, or maybe I should say who, is stopping us from saying these four things to ourselves, others, and God in the present moment? I mean, who keeps us from having a heart-to-heart conversation with ourselves? You know, forgiving ourselves, being grateful for everything in our lives that have brought us to this very moment, loving ourselves unconditionally for who we are. Who keeps us from having a heart-to-heart conversation with others, forgiving them, asking for forgiveness, being grateful for their friendship and everything in your lives that has brought you two to this very moment, and loving them unconditionally for who they are? And finally, who is keeping us from having this heart-to-heart or soul-to-soul conversation with God? I mean, forgiving God for past hurts or grudges that we may have held, asking for forgiveness, expressing gratitude for God's love and precious blessings that we may have taken for granted, and loving God unconditionally. Well, I'm sure we have all heard other people talk about being enlightened or receiving an awakening and describing it as being gifted with something in the moment, you know, being given something that we've never had before. But a deeper truth lies in the fact that we've already been gifted with all those things prior to our birth as souls coming into this world. And therefore, I think the most important questions we should be asking ourselves are, you know, what has happened to us that we, you know, believe has diminished our giftedness and our uniqueness? What has happened to us that we believe that somebody or someone has robbed us of our giftedness or skills? What's happened to us that has caused us to suppress our uniqueness, and that we no longer ask for forgiveness? We no longer feel like we need to express gratitude, or we no longer, you know, tell ourselves, I no longer need to love unconditionally. But the very fact that we have these things already, you know, should wake us up to the other facts that we are those things already. This is who we are. But it's through ignorance, or maybe how we were raised, or just being unaware of that which we already have, that which we already are, that really clouds our vision of ourselves and others. You know, there's a kind of a fun Franciscan saying that states that no matter where we are, we should always look for the peace in any given situation. However, if we cannot find the peace, then we become the peace. If we allow it, we realize that we are not only peace, but we are gratitude, we are love, we are forgiveness. But again, what keeps that truth from coming, and what keeps us from stepping into and fully claiming who we are? Is it our hurts, our woundedness? Is it our emotional, psychological, or spiritual wounds? Our pain? Our jealousy? Strife? Our anger? What are those things that have happened to us that we also allow to continue to take from us our peace, our gratitude, and love? You know, this is Kind of an interesting theme that keeps coming up in counseling sessions many times. You know, people say, well, I've been beaten, I've been abused, I've been betrayed, I've been lied to, so on and so on and so forth. You know, but through their bitterness and anger and rage and unforgiveness and the need to be right, etc., they're also allowing other people to take much, much more from them. They allow people to take their peace, which doesn't belong to them. And they allow others to take that, you know, a sense of living in gratitude, which doesn't belong to them. And they allow others to take a sense of being loved unconditionally and showing that same love to others, which doesn't belong to them. But perhaps then the transformation we're really looking for begins with our prayer and our meditation. Let's just begin right there. You know, maybe instead of asking for things, maybe we ought to ask for things to be transformed in us. You know, please show me what I need to do to transform my bitterness. Please show me how to transform those things that cloud my vision, where I live in denial and illusion. Please show me how to transform everything that keeps me from having a healthy, life-giving relationship with myself, with others, and with you, God. And side thought here, that once we have sincerely prayed a prayer like this and we pray for transformation, get ready and strap on the proverbial seatbelt and hang on, because that's the kind of prayer, you know, the energy behind it that takes us deep into ourselves and we begin to explore what is keeping us from saying the four things that matter the most. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. And I love you. I would love to hear what's on your heart on this subject. So just curious, how has your heart, how has your life been transformed by these four words? And just invite you, you know, after the break, you know, call in. I would love to talk to you about this subject or just get your thoughts on the whole broadcast so far. So that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Right. Welcome back. Welcome back to Reclaiming Authenticity. I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. In the first half of the broadcast, we have been talking about the four things that matter the most, you know, and we've also been talking about, you know, never being at a loss for words ever again. And just realizing that, you know, even though we struggle to find the right words in any given situation, once we realize that the right words have been in us all along, it just makes those uncomfortable times really smooth. It's just a smooth transition and how healing can really take place, because here are the four things that the four words or the four sentences that we have with us, and we can bring them into any given moment. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. And I love you. One of my teachers, Bob Wicks, who's now long since retired, used to say that an acorn has a natural propensity towards growing into a huge oak tree. I mean, it's just one of those like general knowledge things that everybody knows, but it was just nice the way he put it. Because he goes on to say, it has this potential, but there are many things that can stunt its growth: a lack of sunlight, lack of water, external damage, and internal disease. But when those obstacles are removed, this acorn is free to grow into a healthy oak tree. And the same is true with us in our transformation. When we remove those things in our lives that are detrimental to our spiritual growth, our spiritual awareness and health in relationships, we naturally transform towards authenticity and living in authenticity. And forgiveness leads to gratitude. Gratitude always leads to opening up our hearts to really channel that love in all relationships. Well, the other day I was just listening to the radio, and just an old song came on the radio. It's from Mike and the Mechanics. And I believe this single came out in 1988. It's entitled The Living Years. And I'd listened to it a couple times, and I just really listened to the words, to the lyrics. And it's like, wow, this is powerful. This is powerful. So just a reminder, for those who love Mike and the Mechanics, here's just the first stanza of lyrics. It says, every generation blames the one before, and all of their frustrations come beating on your door. I know I am a prisoner to all my father, capital F, my father held so dear. I know I am a hostage to all his hopes and fears. I just wish I could have told him in the living years. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. As I said before, these four things are indispensable when you have so many things to say to a loved one or a friend who is dying. Because you know that your time is limited. You won't have all the time in the world. You may not just say, well, I'll come back tomorrow, because tomorrow just may not be. And you want to make sure you have said everything that you want to say. And this is something that I completely understand. I get it. I've been there. I've sat with many a loved ones, and sometimes we've had the luxury of time, being able to say everything that we wanted to say to each other. I mean, I sat with my mother. It's kind of interesting. She was home on hospice, and me and my two sisters, we took shifts, and I took the overnight shift, thinking that I would get some sleep, but sure enough, night after night, my mother would get awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, and she wanted to talk. And I'm they're trying to stay awake. Really? Okay. Wow. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll be, and just like I said, trying to stay awake. And we talked about everything. I mean, everything. She told me what she wanted at her funeral. She told me she didn't want any dreary organ music, that she wanted praise music or something uplifting. She wanted it to be a more of a celebration of who she lived, how she lived, and so forth. But even though we had the gift of time to be able to say all these things to each other prior to her passing, we made sure that we included the four things that matter the most. I forgive you, Mom, for. Please forgive me, Mom, for. Thank you, Mom, for. And I love you, Mom, because. These words are not just about saying goodbye. As I said earlier, before the break, saying these four things are all about restoring relationships. The hurt and pain that others have caused us, or the hurt and pain that we have caused others. Forgive me. I forgive you. Being grateful for every blessing that cannot be repaid. Thank you for, and the love we have for those who are the closest to us. I love you because. Again, being in right relationships is far more important than thinking that we always need to be right. And this is really where I come in, and I disagree with Mike and the mechanics. Okay, it's okay. I can disagree with them, you know, because even if we don't get the chance to say the four things to our loved ones before their deaths, we can certainly say these things to them at any time afterwards. You know, that last line, you know, I just wish I could have told him in the living years. Well, we can still have that conversation because there is no time and space when it comes to forgiveness and gratitude and love. I forgive you. Please forgive me. Thank you. And I love you. These words are eternal because our relationships with each other are eternal. And this is so true because we are really more connected with each other than what we realize. And this connection goes way beyond the grave. And every time we, let's say, visit a loved one's gravesite or we remember their ashes because we have them in an urn, we're carrying on that conversation with them. Our minds going there, and definitely our hearts are going there. You know, time and space doesn't exist. Relationships do, because relationships are eternal. You know, and, you know, again, the most important lesson about saying these four things that matter the most, it's not necessarily just about death and dying. It's really about a lesson about how we ought to be living. And this is like about halfway through, you know, Ira Byock's book, saying the four things that matter the most. You know, I got about halfway through it, like, oh, wow, that was like, ooh, insightful. Wow. And then I turned the page, and now it's the rest of the book is all about the living. And he starts off by saying, so you've learned how to say, forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you to a loved one who is dying. What's keeping you from saying those things to people in your everyday life today? And he got me. It's like, ooh, yeah. What is keeping me from doing this? You know, who is stopping me from saying these four things to myself or others or God? I'm the only one who stops me from doing that. So what is it? You know, and again, I had to come back to these questions. Who keeps me from having a heart-to-heart conversation with myself? You know, forgiving myself, being grateful for everything in my life that has brought me to this very moment, and loving myself unconditionally for who I am. Who keeps me from having that heart-to-heart conversation? I do. You know, who keeps me from having a heart-to-heart conversation with other people, forgiving them, asking for forgiveness, being grateful for their friendship and everything in their lives that has brought, you know, the two of us to this very moment, and loving them unconditionally for who they are? Who keeps me from having this heart-to-heart conversation with somebody else? I do. And finally, who's keeping me from having a heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul conversation with God? You know, forgiving God for past hurts or grudges that I may have held, or asking for forgiveness, or expressing gratitude. Just thank you for God's love and precious blessings that we have been, or that I may have been taken for granted. And loving God unconditionally. Who is keeping me from having this heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul conversation with God? I am. Me. And, you know, even when we may struggle with saying these four things today and may question, why is the responsibility on us to make amends for, you know, with those who have hurt us? The answer is quite clear, because we're the strongest ones to be able to do this. Again, this is a point that I like to drive home with kids who I sit with, or teenagers that I counsel, and we really get into the subject of their intergenerational trauma and, you know, writing it out to them so that they can see the patterns that kept coming down from, let's say, great-grandparents or grandparents or parents, and now, boom, out of all their brothers and sisters, it lands on them through their depression or their anxiety, and they know the family stories. And then they realize that, okay, since this didn't start with me, Why do I have to be the one to sit with you? And why do I have to be the one that has to deal with all this garbage? And at that point, I know they're ready to hear it. And I usually get a big smile on my face. I try to hide it, but, you know, I get a big smile because here it comes. I look at them, I look at them right in the eye, and I just say, you know, have you ever thought that, first of all, you're not the problem? You're actually the answer. You know, maybe the reason why you're sitting in counseling is because you're actually the strongest one to take a long, hard look at all this stuff that perhaps the people who came before you were just not strong enough to do. You are the strongest one in the family. You have that much power to heal not only yourself, but also others. See, forgiveness is not weakness. Forgiveness is strength. Because unforgiveness keeps us bitter. Forgiveness is powerful because it transforms us and it transforms others. And whenever we forgive or we ask to be forgiven, what we're actually saying is, I'm done. I mean, I am done carrying these mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounded burdens any longer. I'm done. I don't want to carry this around any longer for the rest of my life. It's over. I'm done. Gratitude is also equally powerful because it reminds us who and what is truly important in our lives. If you ever want to realign your priorities, start with gratitude. Start with gratitude. Even the most basic, simplest things in our lives, such as taking a breath, being able to open and close our eyes, being able to have food to eat, water to drink. Simple things that we take for granted because, you know, as soon as the alarm clock goes off, we're out of bed and getting dressed, cleaned up and everything, brushing our teeth, and we're going about our day. Or you might do it at a slower pace because, you know, mornings are not your thing. I get that. Okay. But if you ever want to transform your priorities and have it come from a place of really what's really the most important thing in my life, who are the most important people in my life, start with gratitude and love. Very, very powerful, because love conquers the root from where hatred grows. It increases our empathy. It increases our optimism. And it's been shown to increase gray matter in the brain and actually enables us to release the four happy hormones, as they're often referred to, namely dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, and oxytocin. You know, dopamine. It's often referred to as the reward hormone. You know, we feel better when we complete a task or assignment or doing something related to our self-care or maybe eating delicious food. And when we're celebrating accomplishments or milestones in our lives, such as weddings and graduations and job promotions and baby announcements, and we get that great feeling, that great reward, that is dopamine. And again, forgiveness, gratitude, and love releases dopamine in us. It also releases serotonin, you know, often referred to as the hormone stabilizer. You know, it just keeps us on an even keel, you know. And when we're out in the sun, as I always recommend, wear sunscreen, please, or being out in nature, you know, this is where we also get our vitamin D, especially from the sun. But what about times when you're meditating or you're praying, you're engaging in just quiet time? Or, you know, Tai Chi, or listening to music, or doing yoga, and even running. We get that feeling and we feel stable, or we feel stabilized. That's serotonin. And what about endorphins, often referred to as the painkiller of these molecules? You know, endorphins are released when we laugh, when we exercise. Whenever we take a hot bath and we just like, oh, yes, Calgon, take me away. Or what about eating dark chocolate or even spicy foods? Releases endorphins. or surrounding yourself with essential oils, if that's your thing. You know, endorphins really helps us feel better. And endorphins are released automatically if we perhaps cut our finger, you know, and we might experience the pain of that, but yet the endorphins come in as an anesthetist, you know, anesthetizing the pain. It's already at work. And that's something we don't have to like, okay, I'm going to send in the endorphins. It automatically happens. And again, forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. And I love you. Also releases endorphins. And my favorite neurotransmitter, oxytocin. Not OxyContin. That's a whole nother ball game right there. Oxytocin, often referred to as the love hormone, you know? And oxytocin, I mean, this is where, you know, being social comes in and we can feel it. You know, oxytocin is released during our social bonding or engaging in healthy physical touch or acts of kindness, which is often, I've heard it also said that it's the moral molecule, that whenever we do something, you know, out of our morality to helping another person, oxytocin is released. Or what about when you play with a pet or holding or playing with a baby? Or, you know, give a hug, dance, give compliments. Anything that will boost relationships and the social beingness of who we are releases oxytocin. Forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. And I love you. Said in relationships, and oxytocin is release. And these are just a few examples of how saying the four things that matter the most affect us on a mental, emotional, and physical plane. But what about the spiritual plane? Does forgiveness, gratitude, and love touch us and others spiritually? Of course it does. I just want to share with you just a story, you know, not to say, you know, look how great I am, but I mean, just I had this experience and I came away like, whoa, this was powerful. I was in a local retail chain, you know, that is, you know, selling medication and, you know, people can pick up their scripts. And it also has other stuff there, like a CVS or Walgreens. I'm not plugging them, but you get the idea, or Rite Aid, you know, places like that. And there was one cash register open up front and a line of people, of which I was in, were there waiting to check out a few items. And in front of me, you know, I was next in line, you know, but already up there was this older lady, and the cashier was being very patient with her. You know, she had some coupons that she couldn't find, and she wasn't quite sure if, you know, she got the right product or, you know, or, you know, she just had a lot of questions. And as I said, the cashier was just being very patient with her, and the people behind me were getting upset. And they started in with their heavy sighing, like, oh my gosh, come on, lady, let's go wrap it up. You know, we got places to be. And I just kind of stood there and I listened to what people were saying. You know, I just try not to chuckle to myself because it was kind of comical because people are just like, they're having a meltdown. But yet this cashier stayed so patient. He stayed so calm with this old lady that whenever, you know, okay, yes, ma'am, thank you, have a good day. And she got her things and she walked out the door and he said, okay, next. And it was my turn. I said to myself, hi, I gotta say something. I gotta say something to this because he was so great with her. And I remembered these four things. And so out of the four things, I just said to him, thank you. For what, sir? Thank you for just being so patient and nice to that lady. Well, you know, I just trying to help her out. She was confused. I go, I know. But thank you for taking the time. So I'm sure she really appreciated it. And I appreciated it, watching you and hearing you. And I just wanted to say thank you. And that made his day. It also made my day, you know, because it was just like, wow, living gratitude in action. Forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. These things stand a test of time because they stand outside time. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, thank you for spending this hour with me tonight. And remember, saying and living the four things that matter the most transform humanity. First in us, and then through us, one soul at a time. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.